Hello, welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Monisa, daughter of Persephone. This week we're discussing chapters 36 through 39, the final chapters of the Tower of Nero, and the final chapters of our Trials of Apollo.
Of our third series, our third year. We've done one series a year. That means it's our third year doing this.
Oh my god,
the podcast is a toddler, like a full toddler.
It's got teeth. They think kids get teeth around this age.
I don't I think it's earlier.
It is. They're talking, they're walking.
Yeah,
they have a little personality. Our podcast does have a bit of personality.
Of its own.
I'm gonna say so myself, yeah.
I think so, too.
A life of its own.
Wait, so if our podcast, technically, I think it started in January of, like, 2021. That means it's a Capricorn, which I don't know if I agree with.
Why?
I don't know. I just don't know if I do, you know? It doesn't give Earth sign.
I think I don't know enough about, first of all, Capricorn or typecasting the podcast's personality.
Okay. Yeah, well.
So please give us some insight. Why doesn't
Well,
it
my other
sense?
Thought is we started recording. I don't remember when, to be honest. Probably
December.
Around. Yeah, probably early December of 2020. Which would make it a Sagittarius, which I think fits a little more. Taylor Swift is a Sagittarius, so, like, we're basically the Taylor Swift of podcasts. We should start putting out cryptic messages.
That's all you. You would love that. That would be
really
fun. Project for you.
Yeah, just cryptic messages.
Pinpoint when you started really losing your shit.
They don't even spell. Like, what would I even be saying? What would I be revealing? I don't know.
Minotaur in several different fonts and languages.
Yeah.
Zaddy.
Oh, no.
You know, on that note... I got an email from our friend Bethany who asked us to include this in our next season finale. And I don't think you've read it either. So I thought I would read it to you because it's a really just kind email. And I think it really reflects on just this amazing audience that we've been really fortunate to build with you guys listening over the last 3 years. Ooh. Even when we say things like we're the Taylor Swift of podcasts. Insane, you guys still listen to us. All right, so hey, my name is Bethany, but I would just kind of like to tell you how much this podcast means to me. So I'm a young teen, and I read the PJO books when I was a kid, so it's super nostalgic for me. I just recently reread Heroes of Olympus, and I'm currently reading Trials of Apollo. I've also read The Sun and the Stars, and I'm super excited for you guys to read it. Me and my best friends are absolutely obsessed with Percy. We also have a running joke about hot emo movie Luke, but that's another story. I've recommended your pod to so many people. I absolutely love it. I've listened to it so many times. I also have some anxiety when it comes to large crowds, and I've had some pretty terrible experiences. But I have your podcast downloaded on my phone, and I put it on when I go into crowded spaces. It calms me down, it makes me laugh, and you guys remind me of me and my best friend.
Oh.
So sorry, this was so freaking long, and if you don't read it, I totally get it, because when my teachers post something this long in classrooms, I don't even try. But thanks for being the friends I didn't know I needed. Love you guys.
That is so nice.
Isn't that so
sweet?
Thank
you, Bethany. We are very honored to shout you out.
I also just am very touched that we get to, you know, live in all of your ears and say absolute batshit things. You know, it's what a privilege for us.
Truly. And I always like whenever I, the few podcasts that I have listened to, whenever they're like, they talk about how they're like, our listeners are like our friends and our family. I'm like, yeah, please. But like now, like with, from my perspective as, you know, a podcast, the Taylor Swift of podcasters.
Yes.
It's me. You're my Jack Antonoff. No. I keep getting distracted. No, but I genuinely am like, I feel like I have all the interactions I've had with people who listen. I'm like, you are my friends. And like all the nice little messages, I'm like genuinely, oh, touched.
It's so funny because honestly, our range, I think it's a lot of 18 to 24 year olds, right?
Which yes.
Is, you know, yeah. Our peers. But when we talk honestly, about you.
We're not in that age group anymore.
Shut the fuck up. There are peers, but I was like, I always call like any person who emails me, you could tell me you're 33. And I'm like, this is our child.
Yes.
Our baby.
Yeah. Our mob children.
Our mob children.
The mob children. I mean it in a not infantilizing kind of way, as like you are my mob child. You could be 75. In that case, I want to know your story. You know,
yeah.
Like, how did you find us?
What do you think about this? What do you think about technology? What was the Great Depression like? You know, all that stuff.
You're just insulting our listeners.
75-year-old. I'm so sorry.
Oh, we love each and every one of you.
All your shared experiences.
Yeah, of listening to us.
I know. That being said, I mean, we get a lot of really wonderful emails and DMs. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, we wish, and like a lot of incredible voice messages.
Yeah.
You guys have been really lovely and fun. And I mean, this isn't the end. We have so much more content, but I think it's a good idea to be reflective since it is the season finale.
Yeah.
Finishing a series.
Much like Taylor Swift. We'll just keep the albums coming, you know?
We'll do re-records. Just kind of our thought process for the TV show is we're going to try to incorporate maybe some of the old, some of the new. It'll be very fun. We'll have more to say when we have more to say, so.
Yeah. I do think that would be fun, though. You know, don't want to, like, shoot ourselves in the foot and reach too high, but I just used two cliched sayings in a row. I didn't like that. really not. But I think it'd be funny to, like, listen to it and play clips from our old, like, original thoughts on the book from 3 years ago and then our current thoughts as we see it being adapted on television.
That will also be a lot of work for our editors, so we will we will see how much we can ask.
Yeah. But well, at least it'll be fun, like, if listeners, like, listen to those old episodes in tandem with the recaps of the show.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of the show,
IRL,
the trailer just came out. This will be old news to listeners, but it is... only day old. It's like day old news to us, which is very exciting.
I woke up with a text from Aaron saying, wake up, the trailer is here. it was amazing. Got to watch it. It's really fun because I don't super advertise that this is what I do in my free times, but like a lot of my friends know it. So the amount of people who messaged me to let me know about the Percy Jackson trailer being dropped was very adorable. But Aaron, what were your thoughts? We saw some of your tweets.
I'm excited. I did tweet every single thought I've ever had. No. it looks so good. I do love that it looks fun. Like the kids really look that age. I mean, they are that age. And it's a very stark reminder seeing them in the trailer of like, oh, these are little kids in the first book and they're going through all this stuff and like we get to watch them grow up, and I have high hopes for for the whole adaptation. Like, I really hope they do all five books and we get to like see the kids grow up. I think that'll be so fun. And the CGI looks really good. The special, like the monsters look great.
Yeah. And they look like how I expected them to look, which is nice. I think it's always really hard when you do an adaptation of something that you have only pictured in your head, because, you know, if it doesn't match your imagination, you're like, well, that's wrong, but that's not a real thing to hold on to. I'm excited. I know they put a lot of money into it and it shows. I'm excited to see that these kids act their little butts off. It's going to be so much fun. I'm still holding out for a Logan Learman appearance. I don't know if we're going to get that.
I don't think we will.
Hope. I don't think we will either. He's too busy.
It would be fun. I feel like each season, everyone's like, okay, he wasn't cast as Poseidon. What else can he be? Like, season two, what could he be? One of the Cyclops? I
don't know. That would be so funny. If he was the Minotaur, I think Aaron would pass away. It would make no sense. But you know.
It would make no sense, but I think it would be incredible. It would be an incredible choice.
I did have a moment watching the trailer, because they look so little, like you were saying. I'm like, these are babies. But that's the age you and I were when we met.
Oh, that's so cute.
And we were the same height, too.
We were we haven't grown since then.
We have not grown. I was 6 feet the whole time.
That's so cute. Yeah. We were so little. It is, so like, little. Very special to, like, know people from when you were 12 and still know them in your life, which like not a lot of people have, because like granted, like sometimes the people you're friends with in middle school and high school really suck. Like half of mine really sucked. Yeah. But the ones, the people that I do have, it's like very cool to be like, oh wow, that's how little we were when we became friends.
And it's fun to like talk about the things. There's a lot of stuff that's unspoken because you got to see me in season one. You know, there were no writers. There was a strike going on. Like, clearly, there was no plot. The character development was still happening. I think that's a really fun place to be, because we're both trying to learn what it means to be a good friend and a good person. Mm. And it is really fun. I think it's very rare. It's really fun when I was in college and I got to introduce, you know, it's still even now to introduce, like, you know, this is my friend from middle school. Like,
yeah.
We're still hanging out. It does give the impression that we just made no more friends along the way.
I know. Which, you know. Or we haven't changed at all.
Since we were 12. But this is going to be really nostalgic. I feel like really going to feel really nostalgic watching this show. Yeah. Not only because it is a nostalgic topic for us, but it's the same age we were when we met. It's going to be us watching it from being in our, like, late 20s now. Mm-hmm. And just, it'll be weird. It'll be fun.
Yeah. And it'll be weird, too, to reflect on, like, 3 years ago, like, the exact same time we were reading the first book.
Yeah. And 3 years ago, honestly, we were so different, too.
Wow. Like, that's really, like, what, I don't know what word I'm looking for. But I do feel like the gods have blessed our podcast, the Taylor Swift of podcasts, because we perfectly finished this third, the third big series in the Percy Jackson, like, Olympian God universe. There's not any, I mean, Rick's making more, but, like, the third finished series in this universe, not including his other universes and, like, Magnus Chase and all that, right before the show comes out. Like, how serendipitous. That's the word I was looking for. How fun. How neat. How fun for us.
All right. Now we've done enough feeling nostalgic and being in our feelings. I think it's a perfect way to segue into our last episode for this series. Not including a bonus episode, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And since we only have four chapters that we're doing, we chatted for a little bit. If we have time, I chatted for a long time, actually. If we have time, we're going to sprinkle in some lightning bolt questions from the bank. And you guys have sent in a bunch of really awesome questions that Aaron and I want to get to. So we'll try to sprinkle those in as well. And then Anything we don't get to, we'll try to incorporate either in a live or a bonus episode. We'll see what happens. It's the holiday season. We're kind of winging it.
Yeah. I like the word bank. It makes it sound like it's not just a Google Doc.
It's a bank.
Maybe we should have like a Google form to submit questions.
Oh, that would make it organizing much easier.
Make it like an actual bank. Anyways.
Anyway.
Let's do it.
All right, we're going to talk about the end. It's here. We've got to check in on all of our friends we've made along the way, and we're going to wrap up the series for good. Rest in pieces, Apollo.
Goodbye. Mm. Okay, so I have chapters 36 through 37. Chapter 36. Hooray! Yippee! Yay! Apollo is in the house. Hold your applause, please. Apollo is walking into the Olympian throne room and is immediately struck just by how big and grandiose everything is. And he is experiencing a bit of culture shock, like remembering how they just do everything huge up in Olympus. The gods all turn to stare at him in the doorway, and he makes eye contact with Artemis, who nods at him, which encourages him to walk more confidently into the room. As he walks through the room, he feels himself grow with each step that he takes, and when he reaches the throne, he's finally the exact right size to sit in it, because it's giant, which is just really ridiculous. And he does have some commentary in there about how, like, they could really be any size they want. Like, they could be tiny in tiny chairs. They just do this to make everyone else feel smaller. Zeus is simply just like, "You have returned." And I was like, if he did that, I would throw something at that man.
Oh my god, he's so mad.
He just like looks at Apollo like, "Ah, you're back."
like he ran an errand and came
back. Yeah. Like, "Oh, thanks for going to the grocery store." Apollo kind of like, it's kind of awkward in the room, and he breaks the ice a bit, asking like, "So who won the betting pool?" And it turns out Athena won, like, which means she's actually betting on Apollo coming out of it all okay, which is kind of nice. But it's not because she likes him. It's because she's just the smartest one and figured out what would happen. Hera, who is still brooding and grieving in the corner, lifts her veil and comments that at least Apollo did something. And Zeus is like, "Not this again." He's like, "Women, my wife, everyone." And Hera rounds on him for letting Jason Grace, who is, you know, her chosen son of Zeus, her favorite, die and doing nothing about it. She's like, "At least Apollo grieved and he sought vengeance," which tells us that Zeus literally didn't give a shit that Jason died. Which he is might so have, like, awful.
Taken in, like, an extra 45 minutes to, you know, get his hair ready in the morning. That's it. Yeah.
He had a pause, like, "Oh, I liked him."
Yeah. Which one was he again? Like, looking at whatever's written on his hand. Yeah. All his children are written on the back of his hand so he can remember their names.
He only has, like, two right now that are, like Talia and Jason, and he's, like, gets them confused still. Zeus just disregards Hera's comments and says that it appears that Apollo's fix is permanent, as if he's not the one controlling Apollo's punishment. He's like, "It appears you're back to a god now." And it's like, it's you.
It kind of makes it seem like he's not the one in control, though. He's just pretending to be.
Yeah, Apollo comments that he thinks it's like a manipulative thing. Like, Zeus is acting like he could still take it away. He's like, "I haven't decided yet. I'm not 100% sure I want you to be a god again," and it feels like a bid for power. He says that he is satisfied with Apollo and then officially welcomes him back to godhood. Apollo is just kind of like, "Thanks, I guess," and doesn't, in his head, he's annoyed with Zeus, but he's not really saying anything. The first thing Apollo says that he wants to do now that he's back is go and visit his friends. Zeus dismisses the council and everyone leaves except for him and Apollo. Zeus tells Apollo that he has done him proud, which Apollo knows it's different than saying, like, "I'm proud of you," saying, "You've done me proud." He knows that it's only because he made Zeus look good in defeating Python. It's not because he cares about any of the things Apollo learned or any of the people Apollo met. It's because Apollo succeeded in the thing he set out to do. And Zeus probably wouldn't give a shit if Apollo had failed. He would not be proud at all. So it's interesting.
Something that Apollo had been craving in the first couple books was Zeus being proud of him, and now he just realizes it's not worth it.
Yeah. And he's like realizing that Zeus saying that, like, he knows his dad, he knows that he's not actually proud of the things that Apollo's proud of, because Apollo's proud of, like, the friendships, the friends he made along the way.
Yeah.
Apollo knows that calling Zeus out for this, like, it's not going to do anything. Raging at him is not worth the effort. So he thinks to himself that he wants to just, like, put some more distance between himself and his father, and then nods and thanks Zeus for welcoming him home, and then leaves to go visit his friends. Okay, chapter 37. Burnt Marshmallow Bliss, Pinochle and Strawberries. Love you, Camp Half-Blood. Apollo first goes to the Sun Palace to visit his horses. He's a horse girl. He's like, I want to make sure they've been fed and walked. He's really concerned. And then he splits himself into many separate Apollos to go out and visit all his friends in the mortal world. So all of these visits in, like, the next few chapters are allegedly all happening at the same time. He has a comment where he's like, you could read it in any order. But this is, like, the order it's written down in. So allegedly he's doing all this kind of all at once. The Apollo we first focus on visits Camp Half-Blood. He chooses to appear in his old luster form as, despite hating it at first, it's now comforting to him. And everyone recognizes him in the luster form as well. He reunites with his children, who tell him that Meg has gone back to Palm Springs, her father's old home, with Lou and some of her foster siblings. He also plays a bit of Pinochle with Dionysus, who is still notably, like, he's still trapped in as part mortal. I had a note on this, like, poor Mr. D, like, he asks, like, when they're deciding, you know, Apollo did his quest, he completed his punishment. Mr. D's like, perhaps you should consider any other god that's stuck as immortal. And Zeus is like, no.
So well, Mr. D is still stuck. Not mortal, though, in the same way that Lester yeah. was. He's just stuck at camp. He's not.
Yeah.
He still has most of to all of his godly powers. So he's just yeah. grounded, which is the whole thing.
Yeah. He just can't drink. And yeah. It's like he got caught sneaking out drinking. And he can't drink. And he can't go out anymore.
Yeah. Stay with at home.
Yeah. And then before dinner, Apollo takes some time to teleport to the Grove of Dodona to thank them for the Arrow of Dodona. And he, like, tells the trees, he's like, of the Arrow's great accomplishments, because, he, you know, remember the trees all bullied the Arrow? So he's like, this was the best of you. Yeah. Yeah. And he says, like, that the Arrow, he's like, thank you for sending the best of you. And the trees are all like, who? I just love that the trees are kind of bitches. And they were all bullying the Arrow of Dodona. But he wants to make sure that the trees, and also Rhea, like the goddess of the prophecy in the trees, knows that the Arrow, like how much the Arrow sacrificed. And then he returns to I did kind of come to love the Arrow, but it's very funny that he tried to give it a tragic backstory.
I know, he's like, bullied. People hate this Arrow, they have to make it somewhat, like, redeemable. It was just a funny mm-hmm. Arrow, it doesn't need to...
I know, I loved the funny Arrow.
Trauma, yeah.
Gave the Arrow Everyone's trauma. Got trauma.
Yeah.
Even the sticks have trauma. Apollo then goes to sit around the campfire that evening with Nico, Will, and Rachel. Rachel reports that all her visions are working now, and also that she's planning to take a gap year in Paris. He's like, how did your house, breaking go? And she's like, oh, it actually worked out for me, because now my dad's letting me take a gap year. It's like, okay.
All right. Rich girl problems. Yeah.
Yeah. Nico mentions that he might still need her guidance, like, while she's in Paris, and alludes to some unfinished business. The voices he mentioned hearing from Tartarus. He thinks it's somebody who helped him when he was in Tartarus that he left down there, which we know is Bob. And Apollo tells him that he would help if he could, but Tartarus is out of his power. Will comments that they'll handle whatever comes next, with or without prophecy. And then on cue, Rachel starts glowing and goes rigid, and the green mist rises around her. And Apollo scrambles away because green gas is now triggering to him, and he just, like, runs away for a second because of Python. Yeah. Like a god. He doesn't hear the prophecy, and then he comes back and he's like, he tells Nico and Will, it's probably best that you guys figure this out. So already he's like going back to some of those godly ways of being like, you guys got this one. Yes. But we know it's setting it up for the next book. Yeah. I mean, when this was written, I think people were theorizing there's going to be a Nico Will book. And that is what came next. So, yeah, those are all of those two chapters. I thought the commentary on the throne room with everything being so big was kind of funny. Like, it's just to make non-god guests feel small. It also reminded me of America.
Okay.
Like, this feels a little like Texas coded, you know, where like everything is big for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I also do wish that Apollo had used his newfound morals to stage a coup against Zeus. Like, it seems like the other gods are, like, okay, Hera and Dionysus have both been wronged by Zeus and are mad at him actively. And so instead, like, Apollo is doing a lot of, like, self-growth, reflecting on, like, oh, maybe I'm not going to put so much energy into my relationship with my abusive father, etc. But I'm like, he just is like, we're just going to let Zeus do his thing and not get involved. Like, no, you guys should stage a coup against Zeus.
I know.
Fix the system.
It made me think of, what's that book? Circe, which I remember reading it and wishing, because there's so many things that happen, so much violence that happens to Circe in that book.
Yeah.
And it ends with finding peace and domestic bliss, right? Mm. And for mm-hmm. me, I've always, like, I mean, I love feminine rage. I think that is, it's really righteous. And in this situation too, I was waiting for that and I wanted to see it. And I understand, like, there's like a parallel of, like, he got to help Meg defeat her abuser. And in this situation, Zeus is technically and allegedly so powerful that they wouldn't be able to control him or bring him down, but Apollo can stop being part of the problem by stepping away from the relationship and stop doing Zeus's bidding. And I understand that's a much more mature and realistic result of all of that he's learned. But I would have loved to see some rage and some,
right?
Like, someone shake some sense into Zeus. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
No.
But,
Yeah. This just reminded me, I actually think we got an audio message of someone telling a story like a couple weeks ago about a time that they tried to stage a coup against Zeus, but I'm gonna try to play it because I think it fits in here to this conversation, actually. Let's see.
Okay, so my name is Allie, and I've been listening to your guys' podcast. I was listening to episode 116, and you guys were talking about how, like, if someone would try to overthrow Zeus, he would start a war. And, there's this myth where Hera and a bunch of the other gods, wasn't all of them, but it was a bunch of them, tried to overthrow Zeus and, like, start a democracy, kind of, where all 12 of the gods ruled together instead of just Zeus being there, being the one main ruler. So they tied Zeus down while he was asleep with magical ropes made by Hephaestus. And the only reason it didn't work is because a nereid let Zeus out, which obviously got on Poseidon's room. But that was actually the first time, that was the first time Apollo got turned mortal too. And Hera got hung over chaos, hung over the abyss. And Poseidon also got turned mortal. I don't remember what any of the other gods' punishments were. I don't even remember, like I said, I don't even remember what gods it was. But
I'm so glad I just remembered listening to that one. I forgot that we had that one. It was, like, on my list to include. That came up perfectly. Apparently they did try to stage a coup. That was from Allie. Thanks, Allie.
Thanks, Allie. But Hera tries to lead a rebellion against Zeus, and she hangs her over chaos and then brings her back.
No wonder they're afraid to stage another rebellion.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But I do think it's interesting. You know, Rick likes to reinvent the old myths in this modern time. A lot of them come up again. So maybe there'll be a book where they stage a coup.
That would be really nice.
And maybe it'll work out instead.
I'm reading about it right now. So Hera drugged Zeus and the other gods and bound him on his bed and stole his thunderbolt. However, Boreas, isn't that the hundred hand, hundred eye guy?
Oh, yeah.
He's the one who freed Zeus from prison, from the prison Tartarus, because he overheard their conversation and realized what was happening. And Zeus woke up and was furious. He hung Hera from the heavens with golden shackles, and she cried all night, but no one dared to help her. The next day, Zeus showed her mercy and released her, but only after he made her swear she would never again to plot and rebel against him.
Damn.
Oh, there's a bunch of different versions of the myth, too.
I was just seeing some. It says sometimes it says Athena was involved instead of Apollo.
And it was like Poseidon wanted to be the head god.
Yeah.
Interesting. So that's just like one dictator for another.
That's interesting. I feel like they haven't brought that up in any of these books, the fact that it's happened before in all these conversations about how much Zeus sucks. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, it says Poseidon and Apollo are turned mortal and forced to work.
Ooh, Poseidon had to as well. Yeah.
And then if Athena participated, she was not punished because Athena's definitely the favorite child.
Yeah, Athena's his favorite child. Well, because Athena's also like solely from him, like from his head.
Yeah, so fully.
And so there's no mother involved. And Zeus likes that she's like just created in his image.
Ugh, gross. Well, thank you so much, Allie. That was so cool. I did not know about that, actually.
Amazing. Yeah, I didn't either. That's a fun one.
All right. Well, I have the last two chapters of the book. So I have chapters 38 and 39. Chapter 38. Carrots and muffins, Sally's fresh baked blue cookies. I'm so hungry. So Apollo arrives at the way station. It's summer and the hunters are also taking up residency there. Reyna has been enjoying her time with the hunters. She and Talia fill in Apollo on their hunt for the Tiamisian fox. Who has been leading them on a wild goose chase for the last couple of months. Reyna is loving it. She thinks it's a vacation compared to having to be a leader in New Rome. And she can't wait to catch the fox. They go together to help Emmy dice carrots for dinner. And Apollo observes Joe teaching Georgina how to forge weapons. There's this off conversation Apollo has with us that like, Georgina might be Apollo's child, might be biologically related to Apollo, but instead of investigating it further, everyone has collectively decided to ignore it. She is fully Emmy and Joe's kid, first and foremost, and she also has no interest in Apollo. Whatever powers she has will probably start showing up in a couple years, and they can kind of determine from there, but Apollo also doesn't know if she's his biological kid. Leo is also there, and he's been spending his time doing community service, teaching homeless kids shop skills at the local shelter. Mm-hmm. So things are still complicated between Leo and Calypso. Calypso is fully immersed in high school, and she's loving her time there. She is now away at band camp, and Leo says it's a good break for them. They still have a lot of things that they're clearly working on. Reyna pipes in at this moment, and she's like, the reason that things are complicated between them is because Leo called Calypso Mamacita. Which is hilarious, because it's what we've been echoing this entire series. And Rick heard us and was like, it's actually not my fault. He wrote it, 100% wrote it, and thought this was an okay thing to say. Reader feedback, and was like, actually, it's Leo's fault. He didn't have any sisters to teach him.
He's like, Leo is actually very flawed.
Yeah. So under the guidance of the hunters, acting as like sister and mother figures, they think they can clean up Leo's act and help him and Calypso.
I think that almost makes it worse.
It really
like,
does.
I'm like, let's just leave it, you know, let Leo figure it out on his own.
Apollo stops at Camp Jupiter next. Hazel and Frank are doing really well as praetors. This is so stupid. Hazel's curse is now completely broken. So they've been funding the camp by selling her diamonds and precious jewels. She just pops them up from the ground. So New Rome's has been like completely expanding, redoing, because most of it was unfortunately destroyed during the battle with Commodus and, the other one.
Caligula.
Commodus and Calypso. I was like, that's not right. So obviously they need to rebuild, and they've managed to rebuild in such a little time because they have the money and resources to do so. So silly. Okay.
I'd prefer if her jewels were actually still cursed. And she's just saying they're not, and she's making money, but like,
and she's gonna run away to Camp Half-Blood later, just be done with it. Lavinia is teaching the fifth cohort how to tap dance. Tyson and Ella are back at work at their bookshop, and the Jason Grace Temple expansion is going really well. It has the funding it needs now, so you know.
Nice.
The surprising thing is Percy and Annabeth are now living in New Rome. They're about to start their freshman year doing like a dual enrollment at UC Berkeley and New Rome University in the fall. Annabeth is already like, I'm doing architecture, I'm going to major in this and minor in that. And Percy's like, I don't know, maybe something to do with fish.
I love that.
They talk for a little while about finding out about Jason's death. And they allude to their difficult journey getting over to New Rome, because we obviously missed them and haven't been able to communicate with them this entire series. And they kind of allude to having a lot of trouble on the road with Grover. And I was like, is this the chalice? Because that's where the Chalice of the Gods takes place, right?
I think so. Well, it's in part like getting those recommendation letters, which I would assume happens before the journey. But it sounds like they're setting this up as, like, a potential story. So maybe the Chalice of the Gods covers up through that or something, or the next in the series will.
Yeah. We'll see. You have my copy of Chalice of the Gods.
Yeah, I do.
Get to it and see what happens. Everyone else is ahead of us.
Yeah.
Something that they also want to emphasize, which I thought was really funny, Rick always goes out of his way to do this, is that Percy and Annabeth will not be living together. They're going to be living separately. Percy's going to be a couple streets down in an all-boys dormitory, and Annabeth's in an all-girls dormitory, which I didn't even know existed anymore. Like, on the West Coast, in non-private schools? Like, that's crazy.
They're keeping it PG.
I know. And so, that's the update on that section.
It does feel like with this whole chapter and the last one, they're setting up like 5 different potential books. Like there's Will and Nico, which did happen. I feel like he's setting up some kind of like Hunters of Artemis plot line. He's trying to set up like, oh, what's happening at Camp Jupiter? And then like Percy and Annabeth, it feels like he's like, there's many options I could take. I could write 5 more books, everyone.
He's like, do you dare me to? I will.
Because I will.
You can't actually stop him. We're begging and he won't stop.
Yeah.
Chapter 39. 210 is a lot of haikus. But I can do more if... Insert the sound of a god being strangled here.
The last haiku.
The last haiku. Wow. Rick is so mad. He's so sick of these haikus. He had to do 110 of them. That's hilarious. No. He set himself up for that. He thought it was fun. Yeah. And then...
We didn't have to count all of them. He counted for us.
He did.
Beautiful.
Apollo goes to visit Piper in Oklahoma and accidentally pops in on her while she's stargazing on the roof with her girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Piper is doing better. She's moved on with her life. Her dad has slowly adjusted to life away from Hollywood. She's then updated about Nero and about Jason's funeral, and she's glad that Camp Jupiter did right by Jason in the end. She can also tell Apollo is still upholding his promise to Jason to not forget. And then she doesn't have a lot to say to Apollo. I think there's a lot of unfortunate feelings between them. And Apollo looks at her as Jason's ex-girlfriend more than I think she likes to be remembered to be. Mm-hmm. She kind of moved on. She was like, I'm not. She dusted her hands of his funeral and I don't need anything to do with him. She's kind of living her life. And she gets to be gay. Good for her.
You texted me when you read this and you were like, he actually did it. He made Piper gay.
Everyone's been begging for it for so long, the entire time of Heroes of Olympus. It just was right there, made her an interesting, and he gave it to us in the last chapter, which could be in a whole different book too if he wanted to. He could do a whole Piper spinoff of her time in Oklahoma and doing quests there.
Yeah.
He should not write it. Someone else should write it.
No, I was just thinking that. He should not write POV of a queer native Indigenous, girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't need that one.
No, thanks. Rick. Thanks, but no thanks. Meg is the final visit. Apollo heads to Palm Spring to Aethelis, I think.
Is yeah, what I think that's it? How we yeah. said it. Yeah.
Where the dryads and Meg have fully upkept Meg's father's home. The dryads think Apollo's an intruder at first, and he allows them to drag him to seek punishment for Meg. Meg is digging in the dirt alongside her foster siblings from Nero. Apollo notes that they look haggard and delicate, but he appreciates that they are trying to have a new life. And he notes that they kind of dig as if their entire life depends on it. And he thinks in a way it kind of does, unfortunately. Meg hugs Apollo and takes him around the complex. Herophile has been working as a tarot card reader, and it's been funding all of Aethelis' expenses. I love how he's getting the financial breakdown. How the hell are these things running? The same way, like, how does Camp Half... So the way Camp Half-Blood runs is strawberries. Sales. Yeah. Camp Jupiter is through illegal fake diamonds.
But, like, what were they doing before that? This is a new development. Were they broke?
They were dead. No, they definitely, because they have adults living in the facility, unlike Camp Half-Blood. I'm sure they're getting money in from alumni and stuff. Yeah,
that's true. Maybe they have, like, really high taxes in New Rome.
Yeah.
From the few working adults.
Who don't. You know, who they had to participate in war, and now they have to pay taxes.
Yeah.
To fund these wars. Yep. But they didn't send their preteens to go fight in.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Lou is inside putting together a rocking chair. She's been fitted with new hands thanks to Hephaestus's cabin. Lou tells him she's now aging like a normal mortal and actually is actually excited to spend her days getting old in this house with Meg. And Apollo finds himself envious. He really can imagine himself as Lester, growing old with Meg in this house amongst all of his family and friends, going to visit his camps and finally finding peace. But he understands that's not who he is anymore. He has a different purpose and he can't hold on to that forever. Meg asks if Apollo can stay and he can't. So they have a moment and Apollo delicately asks. He doesn't want to cheapen their friendship, but he wants to show appreciation and affection for Meg, who saved his life countless times. If there's any gift he can give her as a god. And even not, he's like, I'm sure you'll turn this down. So just know I'll always be your friend and be there if you need me. And Meg's like, I would like a unicorn.
I love her.
Apollo also loves this response. He makes him laugh and he thinks it's very classically Meg. Apollo gives her a unicorn and then promises to come back whenever she needs him or even just to visit, and the two part ways. So then Apollo thanks us, the reader, for reading his adventures. I know. We had, and also for all the godforsaken haikus, he apologizes, which I was like, I thank you for the apology.
He promises, self-aware king.
I know. He promises to be there for us, the readers, when we put our emotions into a song or fire a shot. And the book
That's so ends. Cute. Aww.
I know. So cute. Well, okay. So some thoughts. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about of wishing that we had more time to cover it. Rick kind of puts himself in a box by setting up these other books and not allowing Percy to age, because you can't get like an overarching like art like timeline of Apollo over centuries or years enacting change, because we need to see, he needs to be like, what possible other adventures can I put my demigod children through? So Apollo can only have a couple of months to show us what's happened before spoiling whatever plans Rick might have, which is a bummer because I would have loved to see, you know, an epilogue where Zeus is feeling the effects, or like Apollo is feeling the effects of not being affected by Zeus and what Zeus wants and what Zeus asks, and having maybe the other gods show him more respect for doing so, and slowly little changes being enacted. But that doesn't happen, which also in PJO, when Percy asks for more gods to recognize their children, instead of having an epilogue where there that happens, he immediately goes missing and loses his memory. So you don't get a solid ending, but it could have been a solid ending is the point, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like with having read the last two series, like Apollo is all like a reformed god now, and we can see that, but it's really hard to have faith in that with how, you know, each series, at the end of the series, the gods are like, we'll do better, and then they don't. That I think, like, this would have benefited from, like, you know, eons later, Apollo's actually still doing good things or something like that. But so is the limitations of the genre.
Yeah. I covered my other notes. I did think it was funny, and I know I said this already, but the fact that Piper, well, we didn't see her at all, so we don't know how she grieved, and also everyone grieves differently, but Piper just being very mellow, and Apollo have been the one who had like 7 different remixes of The Fall of Jason Grace.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny.
We grieve differently. You know, some people write songs. Some people
go date to therapy.
Get girlfriends. Yeah, yeah. You know.
All right. Let's do our series and book wrap up because we have a little bit to chat about. What was the best part of this book?
Of this book?
Yeah.
Ooh. Hold on. What happened in this book? No, the Trogs. I love the troglodytes. Mm. I think the scene where they meet them the first time is so funny. And I also do really like the way Nero ends. It's simultaneously like good commentary on how like evil he is and also really funny. Like the bit with the remotes. It's so good.
It's so good. And he writes it so well. It's comedic, but also great action. He holds my attention. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. What about you?
My favorite part is definitely his battle with Python because it was just a 5-book arc. Like, I think it was almost retribution because PJO, the like overarching villain of Crook, is defeated, and it's so satisfying because it's done so well. Olympus is literally crumbling. Luke does it himself. He's the hero of the prophecy. Like, beautiful. Heroes of Olympus, it's like chaotic beyond control. Yeah, there's a lullaby. They just put Gaia to sleep. There's a cannon that goes off. They kill one of their own. Like, there's so much going on. This one felt also like it was just Apollo and Python were able to concentrate. It was mythic proportions. I really liked it. I thought it was well done, and it matched the pacing of the entire series well.
Yeah, I think so too.
What was the worst part of this book? I thought this was a hard question, actually.
This is hard. I don't feel like there was anything I, like, hated in this. Any plot points that I was like, meh. I was just looking at the, like, flipping through the book. At the very beginning, when they killed that snake, innocent snake man on the train, that was a little bit traumatizing.
That was really a little sad. Yeah, the Greyhound bus, right?
No, they were on a train. A commuter train.
Oh, yeah. Like, and he's Amtrak, like, I have to situation. Go. My wife will be waiting for me. And he just dies.
They just shot him. It was kind of funny, though. Comedically. The timing of it. That's really, the only big thing that comes... No, it wasn't big. The only thing that really sticks out to me.
Yeah. I did love meeting Lou for the first time. It was a bit confusing. Mm-hmm. But that's, like, me having to pick something I didn't like. It was overall, it was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Rank the book in the series. Let's hear it. So there are, you know, okay. Let's name them. The first one is the Lost Oracle. Oh, shit. Oh, Lost no. Oracle. Then it's the Dark Prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's
Burning Maze.
Burning Maze. And then
Tyrant's Tomb.
Tyrant's Tomb. I don't remember any of these.
Right.
And then this our one. Last one, Tower of Nero. I think that they progressively got better.
Okay.
But I will say that the second one was pretty bad.
I think my top slot. Do we go from worst to best or best to worst?
Let's do best to worst.
Okay, I think my top slot is actually The Burning Maze, the Jason Death book. I actually enjoyed, and I think maybe it was because of the horse. The horse played a big role in that one. But I found that one, like, I think the shock of it is good. I think that might be my top slot.
Yeah, I liked that one too. Is that because the Wayfarer is the second book?
What? Oh, the way station.
The Way Station, sorry. The Way Station is the second book.
Yes. The third was the one with like the labyrinth and the maze.
The
titular burning maze.
Yeah. The fourth one was Camp Jupiter and the yachts.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, the yachts were introduced in the third one.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I liked this one the best. I think Tower of Mirror was the best. You know me, yeah. I like the last book.
Yeah. Yeah, consistently.
Mm-hmm. Consistently. I do think Burning Maze is second, though.
I think this is second for me. So those are just switched for us.
And then I would say Tyrant's Tomb.
I think same. Yeah. Yeah. The other three are honestly pretty on par for me. I think Tyrant's Tomb. And then I think the fourth slot would be The Lost Oracle and The Dark Prophecy would be last for me.
Yeah. It was rough to read. The Leo was not fun to read. The Way Station was a cool idea, but I feel like, I don't know. Maybe the Lost Oracle, because the singing the ant mama.
The ant song.
I think that might make it go a little bit lower.
That's fair.
Yeah. That's hard, though. Both of them are not great. They were not great starts to a very decent series.
And the fourth one, I'm not, like, I think the fourth is third and then the first and then the second for me. But the fourth one, I just, like, still have such a gripe with, like, Hazel and Frank's plot lines being so, like, wrapped up so neatly.
Yeah.
In a way that didn't make sense. But the rest of the book was good, so I'll live.
Yeah. That's okay. Okay, so overall thoughts on the series, Erin. This is your second time reading it. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I think I thought about it much more deeply this time, kind of part of analyzing it, than the first time. The first time, I feel like I was reading it mostly, like, in part because I was like, I know that the, like, big things happen in this series and I want to be caught up so I cannot be spoiled online. And this time I was trying to, I think the commentary, like, the villains are really interesting in that they're not gods, really. They are. They say they are.
Yeah.
But they're not they're not mythological gods. They're, like, based on real human people that are in power. And I find that a really interesting premise, especially, like, you know, in a middle grade book where the villains are usually magical and monstrous, and I guess there's Python, but I think that's interesting. I love Meg and Apollo's relationship. I honestly think this series is probably better than Heroes of Olympus because it's not trying to do as much as that series was. I think some of my favorite, like, there are moments in Heroes of Olympus that are, like, some of my favorite in the whole Percy Jackson universe, like falling into Tartarus. Oh, iconic. Yeah. But overall, I think the plot line of this series is a lot easier to follow and makes a lot more sense than Heroes of Olympus. None of it even, like, holds a torch to Percy Jackson and the Olympians. No. That's where my loyalties lie. But yeah, I think I enjoyed it this time through more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I think as a PSA to our readers, I think you got to enjoy me predicting and not knowing anything about the books. I don't think we're going to do that again. I think the next books that we read, we're going to read ahead of time. And then maybe not, like, the whole series, but at least the entire book will be read, because it was it kind of ruined the books for me having to do a book report every single time I read it. And it made things slower, and it also made me forget what I was talking about when I picked it up a week later to to read, you know, four children's chapters. It's not, it wasn't my favorite. I think I would have liked it better if I got to read it at my own pace. I also don't know, though, if I would have been able to get through the first book unless there was, that's like, true. It was propelling me by having to do a book analysis after.
Yeah. So this is one of those series that it's like you got to get through the first two.
to really enjoy it.
Yeah, which, I mean, anyone who's listening to this clearly did. And obviously people like the first two. Like, I don't think they're, like, awful.
No.
Honestly. Like, they're not, like, terrible to read. There were just some parts of them that I was like, really?
Yeah. It might also just be us in our age, too. But it is our middle-aged selves. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's funny that... the daddy issues are persistent through all three series, and the question of like how much loyalty do you really owe to people who are just blood, nothing else, nothing else for you. I liked that. I liked that. That's a question he tackles, really intense world question, like real life questions, poised for younger, not younger audience, but not making them feel stupid about it. Like he's talking about abuse and talking about domestic violence and just manipulation with just respect and allowing the reader to kind of make their own decisions about it. I liked that. I feel like there are some books that I've read that are recommended for adults lately that I feel write almost to an audience that is stupid. And I hate when that happens because I think that is always feels disrespectful as a reader. I'm like, do you think this is where my intellect lies? It's like you're giving me a character that is not well-rounded, who is not a good person, and you're like being like, oh, I'm telling you that we like him as a character. Mm-hmm. Whereas I like books and series that allow me, like, you don't have to, by the end of this, which we will see in our bonus questions, I mean, a bonus episode, we don't have to decide Apollo is completely pure and good. He's not. He's done a lot of bad things. But we can respect that he went through this journey and is trying to change. And I think that was really powerful that Rick tried to do.
I think so, too. I think that's one of my favorite things, like, about Rick as an author in all his series is he does very much, like, he writes for children, but he writes, like they're adults. Yeah. Like, he trusts them to understand the things between the line, which people do. Like, young readers do understand that stuff in a way that a lot of adults don't give them credit for. And a lot of adults, like, forget that young people can make those connections when they're not young people anymore. And I like that Rick has a really, like, innate understanding, like, of the intelligence of young people and young readers. And that's cool. And we love to see it.
All right. That being said, this has been a lot longer of an episode than we thought it was going to be. Whoops. We have some lightning bolt questions. We'll do a couple of them just because we don't have a lot of time. But we'll do a couple, maybe two or three, and then we'll move on and we'll do the rest either in a live or a bonus episode.
So yeah.
We have a lot. If you sent them in, we have them here. We're looking at them. We just have to make some time for them. That's all.
Indeed. Let me see. We do have this one was sent in specifically for book five, which I thought was a great wrap up one, from Beanoid Humanoid Alien, which every time I say their usernames and they submit a question, I chuckle. But they asked, is Apollo redeemed?
Ooh, that's a good question. Redeemed? I don't feel like we are the people to say if he's been redeemed or not, because first of all, like, the centuries have passed since his crimes, but he's committed those crimes. Yeah. And in the beginning of the series, he's not super apologetic for the crimes. He becomes more apologetic later. I wouldn't say redeemed. I don't think you can be redeemed, but he is a changed person. And so we have to give him credit for that. And I think that's kind of where it stops.
Honestly, yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a good read of it. Like, I, especially because, you know, we're planning to do an episode where we put him on trial. Like, he's done some really atrocious things. But I think in this world, in the Percy Jackson world, with the types of things he's done in this world that are, like, a a PG version of some of the myths and different interpretations, I think you could argue that he's redeemed and he's a changed person and he's tried to right some wrongs. But also, like I said, we don't really know because we don't get to see if he keeps up these changes because, you know, only a few months difference is nothing to a god. It's more if he can keep up these changes for like eons.
Yeah. And how will he influence others and protect the people that he says he loves and cares about now that he has power to do so?
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm. All right, I see another one from CHB Ollie or Ali. Does Apollo like Camp Half-Blood or Camp Jupiter better? We did talk a little bit about this in the Discord.
Yeah.
We both agree it's Camp Half-Blood. I think most people, even when you read these like last chapters, he goes to New Rome and he's like, Hazel, Frank, Lavinia, is Jason's stuff going? And he leaves. When he goes to Camp Half-Blood, he's like surrounded by his children. He's talking to Dionysus. He's talking to everybody. He's friends with people outside of his cabin.
Agreed. He even says, love you, Camp Half-Blood, in the haiku. And he doesn't even, like, mention Camp Jupiter in the next chapter's haiku. So
I also feel like he's a bit bitter towards Camp Jupiter, too, because they allowed Octavian to rise to power. Yeah. And he's the reason that Apollo became mortal. So I can see that he's, like, my great-grandson diluted. Yeah. Has become like a horrible person, whereas he sees his beautiful, shining, golden children.
I wonder if he has any children at Camp Jupiter. He didn't mention it when he was there.
Care.
But I would assume there are some, since there's quite a few on the East Coast. Like, unless Apollo just hates, he does kind of hate California, it seemed like.
Well,
in a lot of the narratives.
He has to be his Roman self, right? In order to, which is the same. He doesn't change. So I think he just sends all of his children to Camp Half-Blood instead.
Yeah, probably. He's like, get out. We don't like California.
No, we're doing East Coast instead. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I mean, this was a long one. This was a great one to, we're in our feelings. I was especially in my feelings, clearly. So.
Me too.
Thank you so much for listening. We have our little wrap-up, of course, we got to do, where we're going to take our usual one-week break, and we're going to put Apollo on trial when we come back.
And then after we do that, we will be doing the show, which is coming out December 20th. We haven't quite decided, like, which days our episodes will come out, but we'll keep you all posted, like, on Instagram or on our next episode. Probably we'll have a decision by then. And then we're also hoping to do, a lot of y'all said you were interested in like doing some kind of like live hangout type thing. So we will probably, we'll plan to do an Instagram live hangout type thing. Probably like maybe the week this comes out or something like that. Just, you know, it's on Instagram. So just follow us on Instagram and you will see what day it'll be.
Yeah, we'll let you know. You know, like we said earlier, diving into our holiday period. So we have a bunch of random schedule things. So we're going to try to figure it out and get back to you as soon as we know.
Indeed.
So if you're interested in supporting us, you can find us on Patreon. The link is in the episode description, as well as a link to send an audio message. Erin listens to those and she'll pepper them in when she remembers. And it's really fun to hear you guys' voices.
It's really fun when I remember conveniently, like right as I'm talking about it. Wow. And don't forget to follow us. I know I just mentioned Instagram. It's at Camp Half Pod. You can also email us, camphalfpod@gmail.com. Great places to send in your questions or any thoughts you have. And you can also message us on either of those to join the Discord.
If you haven't already and you made it to episode 121, please rate and review. We love to see those 5-star reviews. If you don't want to give us a 5-star, don't tell us you're going to review. And don't review, actually. Thank you.
It'll actually, like, deeply hurt my feelings. So take that.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.